Welcome to the Mill Housing Nation podcast, where we are having conversations that matter for wherever the military has taken you. We're bringing you stories from real military spouses who not only understand the challenges, they are harnessing the opportunities to build lives they can love. From new spouses to veteran spouses, you'll get tips, tricks, and actionable steps that will help you along your military life journey.
Welcome, everyone. This is Heather Campbell, and we are so thankful that you have joined us on the Mill Housing Nation podcast, where we dive into the uniqueness of the military family journey by helping you build a life, a community, and a home you love when you are not in control of where you will call home next. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. If you are listening to this episode, we are in April at the time of airing, and we are still talking about the month of the military child, which of course I think is amazing because it's actually just an entire month to celebrate me and my life because I'm a military kid and now I'm the leader of three military kids. So I'm kind of partial. But today we are going to hear from Kayla Corbett from the Operation Childcare Project, from Operation Childcare, from all of the things related to childcare, military family, and all of the advocacy things. And we are just going to get right into it today. And we will hear a little bit more from today's sponsor later in this episode. So Kayla, I of course give you a quick intro, but you know, give us your big spiel. Tell everybody who's listening, if they have not crossed paths with you and your brilliance, first of all, you're welcome, listeners, for bringing you this woman. But Kayla, tell us a little bit about yourself and sort of what you do that makes me want to hear from you today.
Amazing. Well, first, thank you so much for having me. I greatly appreciate it. I appreciate every opportunity to talk about military children, but especially when it relates to military childcare. Second of all, an amazing introduction. You're going to need to follow me around and enter rooms before I do.
I'll be your hype girl.
Right. That's exactly what I need. And I don't have to say anything. I can just roll in. So yes, I am a military spouse. My spouse is currently active duty Army. I did not grow up a military child. I was not around other military children. My first foray into military life was absolutely the commercials, be all you can be. And to me, that made sense until I met my spouse, who was, I was in graduate school, of course, and he was finishing a duty assignment at Walter Reed Hospital. Very civilian schedule. Sometimes he left after I did and got home before I did. And I was like, yeah, the Army of One commercials were absolutely correct. This is exactly what military life is like.
This is going to go great.
So we got married and I had finished grad school. I was working. Things were going great. And then we had our first duty assignment together. It was Italy, where careers go to die is my running. But it was also accurate. So when I got there, I was just, you know, Heather, I was just absolutely astounded by the employment opportunities that were available to families. Like, yes, everybody is trying to figure things out very quickly. It's a high up tempo. People are gone all the time. But as someone who came in with a mountain of student loan debt that I was paying at the time, you know, I had a savings account. We were doing okay. And I was like, okay, well, now I need employment, right? I need income to make this work. And I was shocked by those who were working. They didn't have children. I saw this right away. They didn't have children or their children were teenagers. And the sociologist brain was immediately on. And I was like, oh, this is a problem. Cool.
Like, wait a second. I see a trend here. Like, wait a second. There's a right. trend in this population, right? That's that totally like that research sociologist brain of like, there's a trend in this population. I'm not there's sure if anybody else has noticed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just assumed like super naively, no one else saw it, right? Like as if like these thousands of people who came before me didn't recognize it. I gave it to Google, saw it's been an issue since the 80s. And I was like, okay, well, this isn't tracking. And when I would speak to families about it, because you know, it's very isolating being overseas. Right. And so I went to a lot of community events to connect with people. And I was just like, hey, what do you think about this? Like, isn't this wild? And they just said, yeah, that's just how it is. And I just could not wrap my brain around it. I was aware there were sacrifices. I was not aware it was my entire identity. That was not in the commercial. So
it's in the fine print. You got to read it.
I think at the end they did used to talk really fast to read the fine print. I haven't seen TV with commercials in some time. So anyway, I couldn't get a good career, right? So I grabbed a job and made $10 an hour, required a master's degree. I watched people through one-way glass, take tests on computers. And in that time, I started navigating red tape for families. I was like, if I could just explain why this is an issue to the DOD, like this is, I mean, that's the issue. They just don't know. They just don't understand. They just don't know. But, you know, every time I made progress, there was a change of command. There was, you know, something else that I was told it's down the pipeline. Eventually, I did have my own child. Spoiler alert, I didn't up to this point. I was just, you know, someone with a lot of time on their hands. And we were PCSing back to the States. I got a job. I followed my own advice. At this point, I was the only subject matter expert in anything childcare fee assistance related. And I had everything lined up. And I was like, cool, this is how it works.
Yep.
And then I got denied. I was denied. And, you know, we lost $7,000. I had to quit my job. And it took me over a year to get something to line up again. And it was never the same. I mean, that was most of our savings at that point. It made me a little angry. I'm not going to lie.
Because you did all the things right. You know,
I did all the things.
You did. You checked the boxes. And I think that's something that we as military families feel so often, right? Whether we see it in housing, EFMP or medical care or child care or even spouse employment of like, oh, okay. So I need to check boxes 1 and 2. Wait, not box 3. Okay, but I do check boxes 4 and 7. Okay, I think that I've done this correctly. Boxes 1, 2, 4, and 7 checked. Am I good? And they're like, well, now you need boxes 1, 3, and 6. And
right.
Oh, but because you checked boxes 4 and 7 earlier, now you can't check boxes 4 and 6. And you're like, what? Like,
what does it mean?
Wait a second. Yeah. Like, what does this mean? Why is this terrible? Like, I feel like we're making this harder than it needs to be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And immediately my thought was, how did I get this wrong? And how many families have I let down that I've given this advice to, even though, you know, it wasn't my job. It was just something I was doing as a volunteer. So as I pulled myself back up off the floor, remembered that this has been an issue since 1980. So there's no way this was my fault. I started doing the work. I started talking to families. I learned that, you know, they're afraid to talk about it. And if they're not afraid, they're tired. And they have to focus on the things they can control. And it is completely understandable. Luckily, I have an asinine amount of energy and a brain for statistics. And so I said, if you lend me your story, I will tell it. And that's really what started all of it. I started doing the work. I built programs and pilots and research around what the families were saying, because they have, as we know, been left out of the story.
And that brings you to now. You know, I think for those of you who are listening, this is something, you know, if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you know that I am also a problem solver and a data nerd. So that is how Kayla and I connected, gosh, a couple of years ago, virtually, before we finally were able to meet in person, which is just the nature of, you know, post-pandemic life and also military life. For a lot of us advocates, we're running in similar lanes next to each other, and there's some overlap with our topics, right? Like our financial stability relates to PCS. And so, you know, I know people in PCS reform and people in different things. But one of the things Kayla and I really connected about was this loss of identity in being at an overseas duty station and losing career, the financial hardship that came with being underemployed while trying to pay for loans and not qualifying for assistance. And then also this drive to dig into the data and just be a nerd about it, right? Because you marry the uniform. And that nerd side doesn't go away. Like, you don't just magically like stop loving the things that you went to grad school for, right? And I think that that's one thing that's really unique about those of us in this space who have experienced difficult circumstances and been able to successfully move into advocacy is there's a number of us that kind of had a career and a future before we married the military, and we weren't willing to just let that die. So we, you know, sort of ingrained in us as military spouses, okay, how can I use this hardship I've gone through for good, not only for good of my family, right? How can I keep us safe and stable, but how can I help my community and how can I make this better? And that's one of the things I love about military spouses. And then it's a bonus when you have people who are working for the good of the community who are also nerds and use data to tell a story, because data is pretty objective. There's not a lot of arguing when you have the numbers and you have, it's more than just a story, right? Like then it's,
yes,
you're no longer the outlier. Oh, well, that's just a one-off. This is an outlier. Well, your story isn't the norm of what we're seeing. And You know, then you start getting that data, and then nerds get bored and you send us overseas without jobs and we start digging and then we really hold the line. Right. And so for those of you listening, that is how Kayla and I have connected, is through our love of data and holding the line and fighting for military families, which I love so much. We're going to take a brief break and hear from today's sponsor. And then we're going to come back and hear more about the work that you're doing now.
Trust is everything. For 140 years, Navy Mutual has been safeguarding your family and your future. Navy Mutual's financial strength and stability ensures they'll be there when you need them the most. They are there to provide members high-quality, low-cost life insurance and annuities, educate the military and uniformed service community at large on matters of financial security, and to help members secure their earned survivor benefits. With commitment, competence, and character, for Navy Mutual, it's all about trust.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. We're back with Kayla Corbett from the Operation Child Care Project, talking about her story as a military spouse and going overseas and struggling to get employment in a country that has largely had barriers for military spouse employment, and then also how that translated when she did start to grow her family and how this problem she was already working in really went from something she loved to do and advocate for to now part of her personal story. So Kayla, bring us up to speed. So now, you know, you've got this family, you're growing, you've got this savings that's going away. You can't get a job because you can't get childcare, right? It's this like circular conversation. So how does that bring us to the Operation Childcare Project? What the heck is it? What do you do? And what does that mean for our community? And why do congressmen call you and ask for your input on things? Why does Mrs. Brown know who you are and recommend your work? Because you're changing the conversation, other than being a fellow nerd who likes to ruffle feathers. Like, tell me how we go from what you were doing on a local level with families you knew to getting to what you're doing now.
Honestly, I think, you know, we have this transitional nature about military families, right? We're always somehow behind and always trying to get ahead. So when you think you're going to be moving, you get onto every page, every resource that you can to try to get ahead. Mm-hmm. And what happened between that time and this time is that I was flooded with stories, posts. Does anyone know how I can do this? Comments. I tried to do it. It doesn't work. Don't even try. And while we do advocate for ourselves, while we do advocate for others, I don't know if there's anything that makes me feel more like kicking in a door than when a family blames themselves for something that's not their fault.
Yeah.
It riles me up. Makes me want to go pointing finger emojis into the comments and be like, absolutely not. I will not allow this to happen. I will not tolerate you saying that this is you. Let me tell you what it is. And then I dug. And I was like,
I feel like that's your, have you ever seen that GIF or like seen those reels, or, you know, I don't have TikTok because I think my husband would put me in exile if I had that, but, you know, I've seen him, but it's like how I feel when I hear Shania Twain say,
yes!
Let's go, girls, you know, but this is like, this is your Shania Twain. Like when you see this happening, like, all right, like I'm kicking in a door, you know, that's the imagery as you were saying that, like, or it's a mix between that and like the Kool-Aid man, like, oh yeah. You know, that's kind of, so there's a fun glimpse into my brain today for you and for all of you listeners, is I'm envisioning Kayla Corbett, like kicking in a door to some Shania Twain and busting through walls like the Kool-Aid man and just being like, absolutely not. Like, I'm
absolutely
here. Let's
not.
Go. Yeah.
That is exactly it. It is kicking in the door. Yeah. It is, I will not allow this to happen. No. And when I would dig for these families, because at this point I was good at it, right? I found that it's not written anywhere, that we do have to kind of figure it out. And so I said, why not me? I have the privilege of, at this point in time, being able to survive on one income. I can do this. And I did it. I started sending hard emails. I started asking hard questions. Word got around. There was an article written about me, super timely, about how I was tackling the childcare crisis. And that was through my pilot program in Hampton Roads at the time. And then it really grew from there. My phone was ringing nonstop, constant emails. How are you solving the childcare crisis? Tell us. And the answer is simple. We listen to families. We listen to what they say. We listen to what their struggles are, and we can pinpoint those. And, you know, kind of, we do a lot of case management. We do this for active duty, reserves, retired, even DOD civilians. If you've served the mission, then we want to help you. Because one thing that Heather and I did connect over early on, this was back in 2020, speaking of data nerd, I was trying to draw the hard line between childcare access and food insecurity. I knew that it was there. I knew it. There was just no data around it because there weren't any published poverty statistics around military families. We didn't have food insecurity statistics. And then a study came out. And then I saw Heather's face and I said, yes. I was like, this is it. This is where we get started.
Yeah. That's that data connector side of me. Like, hey, if you guys haven't seen this topic, here's the study that came out about military families. And here's actually what food insecurity is and what it means and how that happens, right? And that comes from my own story, which I've shared on the podcast before, and my family's journey, right? Very similar. Like, hey, I've gone through this thing. It's really tricky to navigate. It's a complex problem. And, you know, you're so right. It's so tied into childcare. And not every family has childcare as the pain point, right? When it comes to food insecurity, that's something I share a lot. Every family is highly unique in what their pain point is. Maybe it's a lack of affordable housing or a lack of affordable childcare or a lack of, you know, employment options or whatever. Maybe it's student loans that they live somewhere and they yes. can't. They don't qualify for repayment, but they can't get a job, right? So every family is highly unique. And sometimes it's chronic and sometimes it's acute. So there is no one same solution. And I know that's something that we've shared the same sentiment about in the work that you do in childcare and even in colleagues that we now both have met, you know, that I've met through you and saying, hey, you know, when we're talking to military families, we're listening to them. And you usually, I've heard you go even a step above that and say, we believe them. Yes. Ask them what they need. And then we believe them when they tell us. And so I think you're so good at meeting people where they are and saying, okay, I can see where, you know, options A, B, and C aren't working, but let's revisit option B, because I think if we work it from this angle and we do this thing, we can really find an option that works for you. And you let families be the expert in what's best for them. And you give them the tools and resources and connections that they need to be able to access those resources, which are supposed to be designed for us in the first place, so that they can ultimately create safe and stable and secure families so that they can focus on the mission, so that they can be retained in the military, exactly. right? Like, that's the goal. You've had a hard time. I've had a hard time. We very clearly still believe in the mission because we're both still married to these guys who decided yeah. we're going to be serving it. We believe in this community and we believe that it's worth serving. And I really love that about everything that you're doing. So, you know, tell me a little bit more about case management. What does that look like for families? How do they find you? And how specifically do you help them when I say, hey, Kayla, I can't figure out childcare. I think I should have access to these resources, but I've been getting the runaround for 6 months. What do I do? So, you know, you take my case and now it happens.
Those are my favorite. When someone has put in the work and they're just like, what is happening right now? So we take all kinds, right? You go through our case management, you can join our case management through our website, occproject.org. There's a contact form. It's important to go through the contact form. Of course, you could still email us directly at support@occproject.org. But we ask the case management because that's how we get our data, right? That's how we track what are families' issues so that we can prove this is not a one-off. This is a systemic issue. Secondarily, to your point, every family is unique. So there are multiple entry points when families come in. They get triaged into categories. Do they need education on all their options? Because DOD options aren't always the solution. You know, CDCs, FCCs, in addition to long wait lists, historically pretty traditional hours, right? Military families, historically very non-traditional hours.
Right. So, yeah, like these puzzle pieces don't fit. Yeah.
Right. This square into a circle hole. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And so sometimes we do need to look at what are alternative options. We look at income. Do we need fee assistance? Can we go without fee assistance? How can we leverage our local community? There are so many resources available in local communities on the civilian side that when I meet with these groups, when I meet with these coalitions, they say, we thought the DOD had you. And the DOD goes, well, if we don't have you, doesn't the community have you? And then before you know it, you're falling down in the cracks in the middle and you're like, I don't know what I can do here. And so that's what we do. We help them figure out absolutely all of their options. And then we give those to the family. We pre-vet, we make sure we never send someone to something that they're not going to access or it doesn't open until next year. If they need help now,
it doesn't work.
Oh my gosh, the dead links, all of those things. And we want the families to decide. I want the families to tell me this makes the most sense to me. And sometimes it's not accredited care. A lot of times it's not accredited care. A lot of times it is something that they can afford and that makes sense at 4 o'clock in the morning in their home. And in those cases, we go through harm reduction. So how can we make this safer for you? How can we make sure that your family stays safe, that your child stays safe, that you feel comfortable with this scenario? And then maybe that's not our long-term solution. Maybe that's our short-term while we wait on a longer term. We also do a lot of accountability. So like you said, someone's in the process and that care does work for them and they just need that fee assistance through the DoD program. We got their back. Most of the time people are coming into our case management. They've been waiting 7, 8, 9, 10 months. Mm. Someone's about to PCS in my case management right now. I just saw an email come through and they still haven't gotten their fee assistance from the duty station they're at.
Oh my gosh.
We put them in. We do accountability. We call putting everyone at the table where we copy in and help them draft exactly what their ask is, detail exactly what the impact is, and then really clarify what our timeline looks like. And because we, over the series of the last 11 years, have learned a lot about what exceptions to policy are, what you can and can't say, we put it in front of the people who can make the difference. And we give visibility to something that has been historically very hidden. And that's where we really see change. We see people move through in less than a week that have been waiting a year, which means it's possible. We just need to get everyone at the table. And that includes the family.
It's so true. And I think one of the things I love hearing every time you're talking about data and case management, other than being a data nerd, is hearing how you're talking to families who aren't necessarily using the CDC or using, you know, FCC care, because we know that a lot of the data sets that are being shared are often polling people who have been able to successfully access it, right? You know, like that's like
not how data works.
That's like asking people who went to the Taylor Swift concert, how was the Taylor Swift concert?
Right.
Well, why don't we poll the people who tried to buy tickets and they were sold out and they couldn't get into the Taylor Swift concert, right? Like, is anybody polling them about their experience and their access to sales, right? I say that because I lived overseas and I didn't get to go to Taylor Swift. So if anybody has a connection or has an extra ticket, I'm a
one of feelings on that though,
family,
right?
But reach out to me and let me know. But you know, you're talking to these families who have not been able to access these resources traditionally and still gathering their data so that when those, you get that pushback from the policy side, right? Because you work a lot in advocacy as well, right, on the policy level, you know, with the Pentagon and with our civilian leaders. And they say, well, we've got, you know, this thing that looks great on paper. You can raise my favorite thing, the actually finger. I'm like, actually, let's have a conversation about that. And you've got data there, right? So I think that's one thing. And every time I've heard you reference data, you're always very respectful of any personal identifiable information for the families that you're serving, which as a HIPAA provider is important to me of saying, I worked with, I've got someone in my case management, or we had this story, or we had this, and never revealing, you know, locations or identities of those people. So then we as families, I can trust you. If I go to you for help, I can trust that one, you'll use my story for good and to, you know, change these systems, but also that you will protect my identity and protect my family, which I think is really important because we do sometimes feel betrayed by the systems that we're serving. And so it's important to know, you know, that people can trust you to one, be in the fight, and two, to protect their data. So I so appreciate that.
I mean, yes, building trust. We know that families have lost trust. I never want them to come to me and then feel like we didn't get at least a good education. I'm not saying that we're going to find a perfect solution every single time, but at least then the family will know. And so many times they've come in and said, you know, I've spent thousands waiting on this. I didn't even know I wasn't qualified. Had I known, I wouldn't have done XYZ. And they just want to know, like, they're very capable. Families are very capable human beings. They know what they need. They just need transparency about what it looks like. And then they can make really good choices. So I never want to violate any trust. And yeah, we not only use the stories for good, for real impact, we assist them while we do that. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. So if for anybody who's listening, who needs to know more about how to access childcare, you know, sort of twofold. One, if you're a family that needs help figuring out what in the heck, you've moved to a new duty station, or you're planning your family, or you've had a change in your plan, is it OCC Project, OCCproject.org? That's where they're going to find you. That's where they're going to take the intake form, right?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Then what if you've got people who want to join the feather ruffling team that you and I are building, right? They want to come over to the professional feather rufflers. We're going to get a mascot and everything. How can they find you to join alongside the work that you're doing, to offer their services, to offer, you know, their hands and their brains? How do they serve with you?
Great question. You can go to the same website, but this time we're going to click on work with us. And there's a volunteer interest link, and that's where all my feather rufflers go. And sometimes feather ruffling is literally just, I want to write my story. Will you post it anonymously? that makes more of an impact than you know. And sometimes it's, I want to help you help families. Can I help with case management? Can I, you know, take on 2 families a month and help do research for them and call places? Yes, absolutely. All of these things. So we are taking rufflers of all sizes through the work with us. Yes.
I love that. I think I told somebody yesterday or very recently that I think I referenced it in a conversation you and I recently had, that my entry level was pot stirring, but I have since been promoted to feather ruffling. So yes. My resume is looking quite good, but I love having people in our network who not only have experienced this, but are willing to also, you know, lend their time and energy and talents for good. So I so appreciate everything that you're doing. Any closing thoughts, anything else that you want all of our listeners to hear, to know about you, or anything that they can carry forward as they're living this life in the military?
Yeah, it's not your fault. It's not your fault in any way, shape, or form. No matter what situation you're in and you're thinking, am I a bad mom? Am I a bad parent? Am I a bad spouse? I can 100% guarantee you it's not your fault. You just do not have the support that you deserve.
Hmm. I love that. Man. Think about the impact that would have had if someone had told me that in that hard season, right?
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I always love talking to you. It always is so great to connect with a fellow advocate. And for everybody listening, be sure that you subscribe to our podcast and share it with your friends. We appreciate the feedback and comments you share with us as we support our military community. Thank you all so much for being part of the Mill Housing Nation. We appreciate you. That Mill Housing Nation is where you always have a community, no matter where you are stationed.